So, like Amber mentioned, I'm with the California Healthy and Health Fund Collaborative, and I have no financial relationships to disclose. And so I'm going to talk about the nail salon community a little bit in California specifically, and I know it does vary a little bit from region to region, from state to state. In the state of California, we have up to 80% actually Vietnamese, which is different from other regions. I know in the West and the East Coast, like for example New York City, a lot of the nail salon demographics of the workers are Korean, Latina, Nepalese, and Chinese, and so in California, it is mostly Vietnamese. And can anyone think of maybe why that is? Have any ideas? Yeah, definitely. After the Vietnam War, there was a exodus of refugees coming to the U.S., right? And so it's actually, I don't know if you all know who Tippi Hedren is. Tippi Hedren. So she, Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, it's a famous movie that he did. She was, I haven't seen it. I guess she's one of the main characters in it. And she's done other work right now. She does a lot of animal rights. She has a sanctuary, in Los Angeles, Southern California. And she was working with a lot of the refugee women that were coming to Southern California. And she had an idea. She was like, maybe you could go into manicuring. You know, this is something where, you know, you're still learning English, and this is something that may be feasible, easier for you to do. It's a technical trade that you could pick up. And so she started working with a group of women, and it expanded completely from there. And so people call her, like, the godmother of the nail salon industry. And if you go on to, like, look at Google or CNN or NPR, there's a couple of stories you'll find where she's interviewed, and she's still recognized by the community there as someone who's really helped to evolve and grow the nail salon industry in Southern California, with specifically among the Vietnamese immigrant women. Most women are of reproductive age and low income, are earning an average of about $22,000 per year. And as you may know, you know, being exposed on a long-term basis to chemicals and various products. And so if anyone here has ever been to a nail salon, you know, one of the first things you may recognize is, like, everyone's Asian that works there, number one, and then number two, there's a certain smell, right? And when I talk to people who aren't as familiar with this work or who haven't put themselves in the worker's shoes, they're always like, wow, I never thought about that. I never thought about, you know, what the workers are going through. And, you know, I've talked with folks who are so exposed to it, they don't even smell the odors anymore from the chemicals. I think their, like, olfactory senses have been burned or just, like, really impacted by all the chemicals they're exposed to. And so when you go into, if you've ever been to a salon, and you think about the products that folks are using, there's obviously the nail polish, base coat, top coat, there's disinfectants, there are sanitizing material, sanitization, there's a nail polish remover, which is mostly acetone is used, and there's also other types of artificial nails as well, so things like acrylics, and now, which is the newest rage, is gel nails, which is also another type of artificial nails where the nail is like layers of it are being put on top of each other, similar to acrylic, to create a natural-looking nail. And we actually have researchers. There was one here that we've worked with. She was here at the earlier session. Her name's Cora Roloff. I think she's from Boston, Massachusetts. And she's one of our research advisory committee members that really looks at, like, the MSDSs. And it's not just the product, but it's like you're being exposed to so many at the same time. So there's three chemicals there's a lot of chemicals. Three that are very concerning for us are what we call the toxic trio. And so that includes dibutyl phthalate, formaldehyde, and toluene. And so I feel like most of you may know, you know, what kind of health effects you've heard of these products and or these chemicals and how they can impact women and children and babies. And also, you know, just thinking about the women working in the salons, I've talked, you know, I talk with people about the work that we do. Some people are kind of say things like, oh, well, that's interesting, because my manicurist I've been going to for years has been trying to have kids for so long, and she hasn't been able to conceive. I wonder if it's because of the products they use. Another friend has told me, oh, my manicurist has had 3 miscarriages. I wonder if it's because of the products that she uses. I know someone just 2 months ago, his wife, who was a salon worker, had went into premature labor 6 weeks early, and I wonder if it's because of the products that she uses. And so there's all these questions that we always have, and there haven't been any long-term studies that really look at the connection between these multiple chemicals and exposure and any of the long-term health impacts. In addition to reproductive health impacts, there's also acute symptoms and illnesses, so related to respiratory issues, rashes and skin irritations, nose and throat irritation. In addition, ergonomic issues, including carpal tunnel syndrome, back pain. We have had workers who have had eye surgery and like shoulder surgery from the various ergonomic impacts. And so for us, the Nail Salon Collaborative really looks at their approach to changing the industry in three main ways. One of them, which to us is really key, is the leadership development. Another one is policy, changing the policy. So what kind of regulations allow for these chemicals to even be in personal care products in the first place? And chemicals like these aren't just in nail polishes. They're in the products we use every day. Shampoo, shaving cream, perfume, lotions, toothpaste, and so policy is a really big piece of what we look at as well, not just on a local level, but also even on a federal level. In the past few years, we've actually tried to introduce and push forward the Federal Safe Cosmetics Act. So in addition to leadership development and policy, we also have the research. So we have a national advisory group of researchers who are experts, obviously, in these areas, chemical safety, products impacting women of color, worker safety, industrial hygienists, and they've really been our guides to understanding how the industry is evolving, and they give us advice and recommendations on how we can message and what's important for us to message when new products come out, like gels. You know, what can we be telling workers and owners when they say, look, it doesn't smell as bad. It's safer, right? You know, and we can't say it is because our researchers are still looking into it. And so how can we message these things? So, and they all three of these strategies really have like a synergistic effect. They really need to work together. And so among our policy work, we have leadership, our nail salon worker and leader owner, owners. Our nail salon workers and owners are also leaders in this work, and so they are able to provide the testimony, you know, be the face of kind of really sharing their own personal stories, which is much more interesting than me coming up here and talking about this work. If I was able to bring a worker or owner here, I think you all would be much more interested. And then when it comes to the research, what is it that needs to be researched? And, you know, we're working with a woman right now who's trying to reformulate nail polish remover. And so we need to work with the salon workers and owners to test that as well. And so there's a synergy among these three strategies that are really important for us to adopt. And so in terms of our leadership development, we actually have three kind of key strategies in terms of the leadership ladder that we utilize to develop the workers and owners themselves. The first one is around occupational health and safety trainings. And we've actually partnered with UC Berkeley Labor Occupation Health Program. And they had, we created with them a full curriculum on health and safety. And it included 4 main topics. And so ergonomics, workers' rights, chemical safety, and infectious diseases. We recently added one on green salon, like green and environmental health issues. And so it's been important for us to offer trainings to salon workers in language. And the way that we recruit is literally door-to-door salon, and like, who do you know? Who are your friends? Can you bring anybody? And people often ask us, how are you able, like, what's your recruitment strategy? What do owners think about it when you go in? Because are you impacting their business? You know, what do they think? And it is really hard, you know. We go door-to-door to salons in language, and the first couple visits, they don't believe that we have anything offered to them that's free. Because this is, immigrant-owned businesses, workplaces, where no one's really ever gone in to offer free anything. So it's like, what do you want from us? So I think not trusting, we have younger outreach staff, right? We have younger and older. And obviously with the younger outreach staff, they need to kind of be like, well, I'm a student, and really try and message it in a way where they can trust them and also offer resources. So sometimes for the first 3 or 4 visits, it's about, I'm going to come back to your salon because you wanted to know about scholarships for your son? Yeah. Okay, I'll be back. Or you wanted me to help you translate this letter from HUD? Okay, I'll be bring it next time and I'll come back. So it's almost like they're social workers to provide support, a lot of them, and my parents included, my parents weren't salon workers, but like look to younger people as those who can help bridge community, bridge, and just bridge understanding, bridge language, and so using younger folks as a tool, and so kind of using that to our own strategy. How can we utilize our younger outreach staff as a tool to help folks develop stronger relationships with each other? So sometimes it can take a matter of months, multiple visits to really develop trust and relationships with salon workers to eventually come out and do trainings, come and participate in trainings. And then once they come and participate in training, when can they come? Because they work 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And so, we've tried, and a lot of it is like we learn as we go, and I think probably for the Seattle folks, you can share, a lot of it is learning as you go. So trying to offer trainings before your salon opens, so that means you have to drive, you live an hour away from the salon and your salon opens at 10, so that means you have to come to the training at 8 a.m., or after work when you're tired at 7 p.m. But we go to their, you may go to their salon and offer it at their salon, but maybe they still have customers because they'll take a walk-in customer no matter what time it is, even if they're supposed to close at 7. So there's so many different things that we've always learned, and it's definitely a lot of patience, but it's all really worthwhile for us and for the feedback that we get from the community. So here are some examples of some of the trainings that we've offered. And these folks came on a Sunday. This is a Sunday afternoon, so some of them don't work on Sundays. And in for those of you familiar with Southern California, there's Little Saigon in Orange County. And so folks who don't live in Little Saigon will come to Little Saigon on the weekends to go shopping. And so it's a way for them to come to Little Saigon, receive a free training, and you can go leave later and go shopping and do the shopping that you'd be doing normally. The picture on the left is ergonomic exercises. And for those of you who were here at the previous session, the person in the blue was an OHIP intern that we had this summer. And then on the right, the person fitting the mask, she was also an OHIP intern in 2010 that we had. And you can see the body map that we've used, and obviously needing to offer all of our trainings in language. So the picture here, this is another ergonomic, we kind of set up a pseudo station. So, what works, what doesn't work in terms of your ergonomics. On the left side here, we have one workshop session on how to make your own products. And obviously, we can't do how to make your own nail product, but we can do how to make your own scrubs and a dip for your hands. If you've it's like softens your cuticle, so you can do something with like lemon and honey. You can do scrubs with sugar and or salt, honey, lemon. Yeah, those are a lot of the main ingredients, and those are really fun for folks. We give them some to take home and use in their salon as well. And so we've done recruiting folks to come and attend a training that we offer at like a neutral site, and we've also gone and given the trainings in the salons themselves. And at first we were thinking, well, this is actually a before the salon opened, that way we were able to get everyone's attention. But at first it was hard because we can offer a training, but if they have a customer walk in, they're not gonna participate in the training because their priorities is business, right? So they're not going to turn any customers away. So we actually came up with this concept of having a salon party. And that's where we actually recruited our friends and allies. We have a lot of ally organizations in the area who want to support in some way, but they don't know how. So we were kind of like, well, do you want to get a manicure? Do you want to get a pedicure? And so if we know this salon has 5 manicurists, we recruit 5 of our friends and allies, and we pay for half of their manicure or pedicure. They come in. We book the whole salon for an hour, hour and a half, you know, depending on how many treatments they want. And then they don't have to worry about receiving a training in Vietnamese. No one's going to tell them, what are you saying? Stop talking in Vietnamese. Or I just wanted to be quiet. You know, we've heard that from clients, you know. They give the training in Vietnamese. And if they want to stop and look up and ask questions or, you know, take their time, it gives them that space. And so that's really been a fun concept, and we had the 4 training modules, so we actually divided up into two per session, so each one went about an hour and a half. The second piece, in addition to the occupational health and safety training, is actually doing leadership development skills building. And so in the San Francisco Bay Area, we've been able to develop with relationships with elder outreach workers in the community. We've been able to develop a lot of strong relationships, and some of them have worked in salons before. Some of the outreach staff come from like health clinics that have institutions in the community, so they have a lot. They know, hey, I'm connected with Asian Health Services. This is a reputable organization or health clinic, so I'm going to come to these trainings. And we actually offer training topics such as like understanding current issues in the nail salons. The BBC, which is a state board, that they do random inspections and licensing. They do licensing, and they also offer random inspections of salons. And so there's actually a lot of fear because there are inspectors, and they often act like police and treat workers and owners like criminals. A lot of it has to do with language access. Understanding healthy nail salons and what does it mean to be a healthier nail salon. We've done stuff on immigration history. What does it mean to be an Asian American immigrant in the United States? And so really trying to develop a community, a sense of community. And these leadership trainings are offered once every 3 months. And we've been doing them for about 5 years. And out of these leadership trainings, some of the owners actually said, we want more. Like, we want more trainings, you know, something that really can help us get more engaged. And so we created this concept of core leader training for a smaller subset of folks who actually apply. We'll get more specific, deeper training on things like how to do outreach, how to share your testimony to a policymaker, how to talk to the media, how to do a power analysis, and how to support meetings, how to do note-taking, things like that. And so really smaller groups of folks have been able to really become closer and become stronger leaders in the community. And part of one of the outcomes of the core leader training is it's important to have opportunity and space to be visible and use your skills. And so we've actually done a lot of advocacy and civic engagement with folks. Like I said, we have the Federal Safe Cosmetics Act, so we've held a National Week of Action for Salon Safety, and have done a lot of advocacy in Washington, D.C. to push for the Federal Safe Cosmetics Act. This is actually, the top 2 pictures are actually from last week. A group of salon workers, we have a strong partnership with the White House, Initiative on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and they helped to set up an interagency working group. So when you think about the nail salon industry, what are the regulatory agencies? There's a lot. FDA, because FDA oversees cosmetics. EPA, because there's the environmental protection issue. OSHA, because of the workplace labor and rights. That's a whole other issue as well for the DOL folks. Everyone's misclassified as a contractor. I think out of the probably hundreds of salons, maybe 2 have actually classified them as employees. And so California, it's crazy. So that's a whole other thing. So Small Business Association has been with us. Office of Women and Children have attended. And I'm sure I'm forgetting others, but there's a lot of oversight agencies, and so it's just kind of like we want to get them all in one room. And so the White House Initiative was able to help us pull those folks into one room to really talk to each other, and so that they can know that this is not just, it's not easy just to work with one industry. Everybody has to, you can't keep, and obviously folks are passing the buck and trying to say, well, that's not my issue, this agency should focus on it. We try and hold people accountable. So we've been working with this interagency working group for probably about 4 years now, and I've been able to get a lot of changes from that. OSHA has been especially helpful with us. And here's just more images. We've done a lot of local policy too, and so in San Francisco in 2010, we actually passed with the city and county of San Francisco the Healthy Nail Salon Program, and that is, it's a volunteer recognition program. It recognizes salons that you utilize a list of that, follow a list of 10 rules to become a healthier salon. So it's kind of like a green business program, but much more delicate or easier to do, and it's a baby steps towards a green business program, because when we actually talk with them about green business programs, the salon workers and owners were like, oh my gosh, this is way too much. We can't do all of these things, but we can try and narrow it down. So this is kind of baby steps approach. Here's some media. So this is San Francisco. This one is in Santa Monica when we launched the program last year and got a lot of press there. This is a providing testimony at the San Francisco launch. And again, like I mentioned, the national impact has been really important and key for our work to continue and just gain visibility. This is really cool. Chris Liu, who is the Assistant Secretary for Department of Labor, he just got appointed. He used to be the assistant to the president. And he, when we had one of our Week of Action 2 years ago, everyone was really excited because they're like, Chris Liu's going to come. I'm like, yes, okay. But he can only stay for half an hour. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, we can try and, the workers are going to be giving their testimony later towards the end, so he's going to miss it. But he could still be there for part of it. And he ended up staying. And he, when he heard the workers are providing testimony, he ended up staying. And he was super impressed and just kept on talking about how important it was for him to hear from them. And so that really was another thing that kind of validated to us that the leadership of the workers and owners is really critical for our work to move forward and it just be visible in the government side of things and making policy change. And he continues to talk about the nail salon work. When he's interviewed for magazines and stuff, like he mentions it, so I feel like we really made a great impact on him. And now he's part of the Department of Labor, and so really having friends on the inside has been helpful to us. And like I mentioned, we have our Healthy Nail Salon program, which started in San Francisco, has expanded to Alameda County, Santa Clara County, San Mateo County. We're trying with Marin County. It's tough. They're a tough cookie to crack, Yeah, so, and then Santa Monica down here. Here's the images of the San Francisco salon, the first round of San Francisco salon owners that joined, which was really great. And then this is the first round of Santa Monica owners that joined. And, you know, part of the program is we got a lot of buy-in from the policymakers, the city council, the supervisors, which has been really great. For LA County, we're actually looking, for LA now, we're actually looking to expand to all of LA County. So those are just kind of some of our examples of our leadership work and why it's so important for us. And we continue to learn and grow and also learn from the other programs that are emerging across the country. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you. So using nail polish, top coat, and base coat without the toxic trio. Must use natural gloves. And at first we actually had you must use N95 masks, but then we realized that folks were not wearing the right sizes, and so sometimes the air would just get trapped in there, or they're using it for too long. And so I think our research advisory committee is actually kind of like re-looking into that specifically. If anyone has any other suggestions around the mask issue, that's you'll definitely want to hear it. Let me just share a couple more of the other. Some customers like to bring in their own colors, so if they do, they must also follow the same guidelines. There's a lot of turnover in salons. If you have new staff, you have to make sure that they're trained as well. Those are some of the... nail polish remover, we recommend using acetone, pure acetone, because there's been a lot of regrettable substitutes in some of the other nail polish removers that people have said that are safer. And so, again, that's another thing that our research advisory committee is looking into as well. So those are some of them. Yeah, and for us, people also ask us, how's it going? You know, are you doing a self-evaluation and assessment? So I know San Francisco is doing a big evaluation and assessment, and Santa Monica, we've been doing ours as well. So, yeah. I know. We showed them, like, the different ones, and then we pull out the big one, and everyone's like, yeah.
That's actually what they do really need, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
With these solvents and chemicals right in your breathing zone, the nail polish removers that substitute at least some of the acetone with ethyl acetate are supposed to be milder than acetone, and it is particularly toxic, but other stuff that they throw in them is a separate issue.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, that's one of them also. So they must have a mechanical ventilation unit in their salon. So one that's either like part of the building, or they have, I don't know, some people may have seen them, like ventilation tables, where it actually sucks the air down. And also,
how often do they have those?
Yeah, so for our program, we actually, that's one of the requirements, and so they have to have one of the ventilation units. For San Francisco, and they cost a lot, right? So for San Francisco and Santa Monica, we've actually done incentivized programs. So if you join, you can get a rebate for your, the government has, or the policymakers, the local policymakers have offered rebates for them to help pay for it. And we've been able to kind of get some deals with some of the companies who are familiar with our program. And there's also like a ventilation unit that's like a standalone kind, and it's actually like a almost like a vacuum that you can bend down or adjust to where the polishes are being done. And mostly we encourage them primarily to, or at minimum, to use it with acrylics, because there's a lot of sanding and a lot of dust that comes with the acrylics.
All right, 1:30.
Oh, great. Great. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. For Santa Monica, it's interesting. It depends on the demographic. In Santa Monica, everyone wants to do gels. And so that's something we're still learning about too, and so it's like our research committee definitely has a lot of stuff on their plate in terms of questions that we have. For other areas, you know, for other women of color who prefer to have acrylics, I think San Francisco has gone through it, and so a lot of it is also just like expanding the program and letting people know what are other reasons why it would be good for you to join this program, you know. And so one of the things that we're doing with our evaluation is how has your business been impacted, because for us, and it's a totally different lens and like brain that we have to look at, because we're so used to, oh, health and safety, but it's for your health, it's for the environment, but we have to think about it with the hat of a business owner. Right, and so that's one of the things that we've looked at. We've had informal conversations with some of the salons that have joined, and their business has gone up to up almost 30%. And so really trying to push that. Look, we're offering you free advertising. That's part of the program. We can teach you how to do more Yelp stuff or more social media. And so really trying to be creative on in relationships, you know, obviously with coming back, showing them, look at this is what we did with the first batch of folks who joined, like they got recognition, and so just trying to incentivize them and just show them the benefits of joining. It is hard though. Yeah. Thank you.